You'll turn to Colossians chapter 3. I want to use tonight some verses that we have already looked at a few weeks ago, but I want to go back to them because there are some more things that I like to discuss. I want to go back and look at the passage concerning mothers, fathers, and children, because there is so many things that need to be said about the families today. And I'd just like to go back and spend some more time in that tonight. In Colossians 3, verses 18, 19, 20, and 21, it says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." The home is under so much attack today from the world, and many agencies today have pulled out from the family the authority that I believe God has placed there, and that is the family is the basic unit in society. It's not the school and it's not the government, but it's the family. And God intended for the family to be a strong unit. And it's sad when we can't have it all the way God intended, but at whatever stage we are, we ought to come to the Word of God and say, "God, if there are ways in which we can improve our family situation, or if our families are now gone, if there are ways that we can encourage younger couples, how can we do that?" Because God wants, I believe, strong families. And tonight I want to look specifically at parenting and children relationship to that. In other words, parents and your responsibility in disciplining, and children and your responsibility in obeying. Sometimes I have talked with some young people and they say, "Boy, I don't like what my parents have to say. And I don't like to do what they say, and I can't wait till I can get out and that I can find my own partner and we can have our own life, because I don't like being with my parents." And there's a variety of reasons why they say that. Sometimes it's a difficult situation at home. Other times it's just that they don't like the fact that their parents put restrictions on them. Sometimes they just want out from underneath authority. And there are various and different reasons, but the implication in these, when it says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord," I just want to point a couple things out as it relates to children. Let me give you some incentives on why you ought to listen to your parents. In light of your future, in that you'd say, "I'd love for God to give me a family in the future." Let me give you some incentives on why you ought to obey your parents tonight. Now, some of these aren't going to be big incentives to you at this point. They're going to mean a little bit more down the road. But some of the reasons I want to share with you relate to the time when you get old enough that you want to get married and have your own family. And you say, "Well, how does my obedience to my parents relate, my relationship to my parents relate to marriage in the future?" And that is for several reasons. Number one, I believe God wants you to be obedient to authority before marriage. You say, "Boy, that's a long ways off yet." Well, it might be. But here again, let me give you some incentive why to obey now in light of future marriage. And that is because some of you who are married here tonight can attest to some of these things I'm going to say. I have gleaned the minds of others on these matters, and I've had people say, "You know, if you ever get the chance to say some of these things, would you please plug these in and give some light to those who are coming?" I said, "I'll be glad to." And here are some of these things. Number one, marriage doesn't create problems, but reveals problems that were never resolved before marriage. Now, some of you would smile, and you agree with that. You say, "You know, you admit it. When you're in love and you're going to get married, you'd say, 'Boy, when we get married, all the problems will dissolve.'" But you know, amazing thing is that that's not how God designed it, and that's not what happens. If you take a problem into the marriage, if it doesn't get dissolved before marriage, it stays in marriage. And the same is true that if marriage reveals what one was in secret before marriage. And a lot of times, I've talked with couples that I grew up with, and they fell in love and got married, and I've sat around the tables and talked with them before, and they said things, you know, like, when we were dating, we thought we knew each other pretty well, but we found out we were hiding things from each other. And we hid some habits that we had. And the other one kind of smiled and said, yeah, you sure were hiding some things and habits. And it reveals what they were in secret. And obedience is so important before marriage, because if there is a stubbornness in you in obeying your parents when you're growing up, do you know what's going to happen if that doesn't get resolved? You're going to take it right into marriage, and this stubbornness is still going to be there. Because disobedience to parents demonstrates itself. You think about why. You kids that are in high school, you don't want to admit this, but you stay with me here. Why do you disobey your parents? If we're honest, why we disobey is because I'm stubborn. And it's because I've got my own will, and I want to do what I want to do. And there's a certain amount of pride, and you say, man, I'm getting old, and my parents don't have any right to tell me what to do anymore. And it's true that there is a transition where you're becoming an adult. But you see, if you are continually disobedient to your parents, all it does is tell us that there's some stubbornness and some pride and some self-will there. And if you do not learn to deal with that in your early years underneath your parents, you're going to take that right into a marriage situation. And it's going to still be there, and the stubbornness is still going to be, and the self-will and the pride are still going to be a part of it. And so those, you say, oh boy, are you saying that I'm going to struggle in my marriage if I don't obey my parents? Well, that may be simplifying it a little much. But I just wanted you to realize that there is a link there. There is a link there. And there's a place for honoring. And secondly, many times parents are telling their children, don't rush into marriage. Don't rush into marriage. Sometimes you've got high schoolers that are just ready to get married, and the parents are trying to put on the brakes some. And some have sat down and told me, said, if you can share these things, just tell them. It's not that you may not have the right person, but don't be in such a hurry. Don't be in such a hurry. Because listen to what your parents have to say. You see, there's precedence for that. We've got Christ and his analogy with the bride, and it tells us that Christ is preparing a place for his bride. Even now, he is preparing a place for his bride. He's perfecting our lives. If we were to read Ephesians 4, he is perfecting our lives. He is preparing for himself a spotless bride without blemish. And he is working in our lives and preparing us. And so when our parents come along and they say, slow down and don't be in such a hurry, what lessons can our parents be trying to teach us at that point? And that would be maybe number one is for me to start taking assessment in my life, and for you young people, you can begin this even now, no matter what age you are, and begin asking yourselves, am I growing spiritually so that I can be a spiritual partner for whoever God brings into my life? Am I growing spiritually? If I'm going to go into a marriage relationship, I want to be one who is a spiritual encouragement to my partner. Secondly, I've got to have moral victories in my life. In other words, can I go into this marriage and know that I am not, haven't misused what God has given in a frivolous way with several others and go into the marriage relationship and act like everything is fine. And we haven't even been honest. And see, God is able to forgive that. But we've got to say, am I morally ready for marriage? And then it's good to start thinking about finances. This world is changing constantly, and some couples have come in and sat down and said, we want to get married. I say, great. And I look at the guy and say, are you able to support her? He says, sure. I say, well, tell me what you make. And they tell me, and it's hard to keep my smile from popping out. And I say, okay, I'll tell you what. So I'm going to give you a sheet, and you go back and you figure out how much this, and this is. And you plug in how much you make, and you come back and show that to me. And they'll come back with their mouth dropped open. Say, you mean it costs that much? You know, that's right. That's right. Well, that just comes under the idea of making proper preparation in listening to when the parents come along and say, hey, you better slow down here. Better slow down a little bit. Of course, you've got to be careful if you stretch it like I have. At this point, my parents are saying, hurry it up. Speed it up. They're always prodding me now. And so you can drag it out too far. But there's a lesson there. I think you get it. Is that you've got to listen to what they're saying. And so when God says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, He has purpose in it, because it is also a process toward the day when you have your own home. Now, I'm going to hit all kinds of areas tonight. I'm just going to... We've talked with the kids. I want to talk with those of you that have young children. I want to talk with you who have older children. Just thinking about this fact that we've got parents and how they relate to their kids, and kids, how do you relate to your parents? Let's look from the parents' side. What is God's responsibility? What has He given to you as parents? Verse 21 says, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. So what is the reference to that? The reference is, as you are training them, as you are disciplining them. That's why verse 20 is talking about, in the process of children, you obeying your parents, parents, as you are leading and guiding those children and disciplining them, be careful that you do not provoke those children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Just flip over a couple pages to Ephesians chapter 6. This is a companion passage. And here he says some specific things to the parents. Ephesians 6:1 is the one that your children probably learned when you were small, if you grew up in a Christian home. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with promise that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. Verse 4, and fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Almost the same thing as what we read. But then he goes on, he says, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Okay, let's take that phrase, but raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The first thing I want you to see from your parents' vantage point is, parents, you have the responsibility to guide your children. You have the responsibility to guide your children. And bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord tells us two things. Is that you are to guide your children in, number one, love, and second of all, discipline. You are to guide them in love, and second of all, discipline. But let me say, I have given you two words there, love and discipline, but get this. You cannot separate those two words. You cannot discipline apart from love, and you cannot love apart from discipline. Sometimes I've heard a parent say, well, I love my child too much to discipline them. Baloney. That is not biblical. The Lord, whom the Lord loves, He does what? He chastens. Why? Because He cares enough about them that He doesn't just let them do whatever they want. And second of all, if you discipline outside of love, you are not disciplining them. You are doing nothing but antagonizing them. You are punishing them. And I do not see in the Bible a place for punishment that is not for a purpose of building up that child. If you do it just to get back at the child for something that they did wrong, I don't think that's biblical discipline. I may say a few things that may be a little bit different than what you're used to thinking in terms of, but stay with me. What does it mean when we love our children? And how do we demonstrate that love? Number one, by something very simple, but I need to remind some of you to do, and that is to tell your children that you love them. You know, we don't have a whole lot of trouble telling that six-month-old baby we love them. But you know what? It's somehow parents tend to forget to tell their children that they love them when they start getting into the teen years. Somehow it comes to a screeching halt. And I'm not sure why that happens, but you know teenagers, as much as they go, ugh, they like it and they appreciate it. I thought something was very interesting in Dr. Dobson's latest Focus on the Family magazine. I just want to read you a couple things of some letters that have been written by teenagers. It says, Danny was from a Christian home and had come to me for advice. Danny says this, sometimes I feel so alone, like no one cares. My folks live in their adult world, and I live in my teenage world. It didn't always seem to be that way. I know it sounds crazy, but I want them to leave me alone, and yet I want to be part of their lives. Well, that's an honest assessment. That's exactly what happens. Danny looked up and gazed past me as he spoke more slowly, and he said this, most of the time, they do leave me alone, and it gets pretty lonely. Well, that's something coming from a teenager. Let me read you something else. After a rally in Detroit, a girl about 14 years old came up to me with tears streaming down her face, and she said, no one ever hugs me anymore. My dad doesn't hug me. My mom doesn't hug me. Nobody. He goes on to say, our study among Christian teenagers showed that about 55% said they spend less than 15 minutes per week with their fathers. I know that as parents, we have many demands on our time, and the kids themselves are going in 20 different directions at once. But our kids are crying out for love and acceptance. If we don't give it to them, they may seek it elsewhere. And I just say that just to remind you, parents, is that in your love for them, though they may act like they don't like it, tell them you love them. Tell them you love them. Verbalize it to them. And to you who have smaller children, or those of you who are grandparents, if you want to encourage some of your kids, you demonstrate love by applauding when your children are obedient. Don't just take for granted that you expect them to be obedient and that you only get on them when they do wrong, but you reward them when they're obedient. It's been fun watching my niece and nephew. And I have two nephews. And to watch my brother-in-law and sister work with them. And one thing that they do that I think is so good, and that is with those young ones, when they obey, they make it a big party. If they do what they ask, they cheer, and they hug them, and they say, we are so proud of you. And if they run and get their pajamas on when they're supposed to, they come out, and when they come out of the room, kid comes out, ta-da, and they cheer and they clap, and it's a big event. And, you know, I get there and I sit there and I laugh. And I say, this is hilarious. But I think they're on to something, and that is they are teaching those kids, we don't just expect obedience out of you, but we are so pleased with you when you obey. And we are thrilled that you do what we ask you to do. And listen, children rejoice inwardly when we demonstrate love and appreciation. And let me just say that adults also appreciate our love and appreciation. Adults never outgrow that either. And your kids may have their own kids, but don't be afraid to show love and appreciation because everybody likes it. Everybody likes it. Now, what does it mean to discipline our children? Disciplining children, let's go to Hebrews 12. Here we have a verse that I made reference to a second ago, but let's let God explain it a little bit more. When you discipline your children, let's define that a little bit. Hebrews 12, 5 through I think it's 5 through 7, says, "And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto sons. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Lord chasteneth not?" He raises the question. He says, what kind of father doesn't chasten his son? And is he genuinely a son if the father never chastens him? But let me do a definition here for you. When we talk about disciplining, we are talking about correction, not just punishment. And parents, for those of you that have young ones, if you can get this into your head and get a grasp of this, it is so important. God never punishes just to get back at you for doing wrong. He never does that. When God chastens, He is correcting you so that you will not fall into the same pitfall again, and that you will not hopefully repeat that thing, that you will learn from your mistake. And the whole key is, if discipline is nothing but punishment, it is just you are getting something bad for doing bad, and you have accomplished nothing. But if you are disciplining so that they learn and do not repeat it, you have taught. Now, I have had some things suggested to me that I will share for you for those with young children of how to discipline. Is number one, be consistent. Don't say that you're going to do it if you don't mean it. I like what Dr. Dobson says. He says, here's what parents do many times. No! And that's semi-final. The kids understand it at least that way. Say no, but and that's final, I guess. Unless I change it later. And just be consistent. Be consistent. And I would suggest that you, as mothers and fathers, develop the same method for correction so that you both do it the same way. My parents developed that over the course. At first, when I was young, they had different methods. My dad's worked, my mom's didn't. And they had to do some rethinking on that, because I can still remember. Sometimes when my mom would discipline me, it didn't faze me. Did not faze me. And then my dad would come in and he'd do it. And that time it was effective. That worked. But learn to develop. Now here are some things that have been suggested. Number one, I've had some suggest when you discipline small ones, don't use your hand. And the reason they suggest that is that then any time your hand starts to come at them, they don't know whether to pucker or to cringe, because they don't know what it's going to mean. And I just share that with you. I think that's an interesting observation. It doesn't mean you fail if you use your hand, but rather they suggest don't use your hand in disciplining, because they want the hand to be one of love. Rather, find something that works effectively, be it a paddle or something that will not harm the child. We're not talking about, you have to be so careful today. We talk about punishing. There's a place for punishing children, biblically. But that doesn't mean you damage the child. And so something lightweight that will not break something or put lasting. I know we smile as we say this, but you have to make clarifications today. You want it to sting. And it ought to happen where God designed lots of padding for that to take place. So, some have suggested do not use your hand, but use a lightweight paddle. Secondly, some have suggested, as much as possible, avoid disciplining in front of other people. In other words, if disciplining needs to take place, you take them in another room, in private. Because if you embarrass them in front of others, many times you've lost what you were trying to accomplish, because all they can think about, they can't concentrate on what you're talking about, it's just that other people are watching, Dad. So they suggest do not discipline in front of others. Try and get them in a separate room. Listen, I had to make several trips out the back of the church when I was small. I think I've mentioned to you before, I was trouble up in front one time, and my dad stopped preaching right in the middle of the sermon. He came down, and he took me out the back door, and the people just sat there. And a few minutes later, we came back in, he sat me down, and he continued preaching. And even as a little guy, I remember that, and you better, that didn't happen very often. You don't do that too many times. But he did not do it in front of the whole congregation. He took me out back. And when they get old enough, they understand why what's happening, and you can reason with them. Some have said this has been very effective, and that is when they discipline, they set them down in the room, and they say, "Now, I want you to tell me why we're in here." And you may have to go around the barn a few times before they'll admit what they did wrong. You get them to admit why they're there and what it deserves. It deserves a spanking. And then to protect yourselves and so that you do not become a person that disciplines in anger, but rather that you have a purpose, some have said, know how many swats you're going to give them before you ever start. And do not go beyond that. If this is a 5 spanking action, you hold it to 5 and you do not go over it. So that you do not do it in anger and bring your children anger. If they can tell dad's just letting loose, they're saying, well, he's long forgotten what I did. He's just letting off some steam. And he's forgotten why he's doing it. And so they suggest, know how many you're going to give. Then once you're done, you again ask them why they had to be spanked. And then you love them. You hug them and you tell them you still love them. And that you did it because you care for them. Those are some suggestions. I think they're good. And that may take some rethinking on some of our parts, and that's good. If we have to think about what we're doing, that's good. I mentioned it already, but we don't want to discipline in anger. When the kids say, look at us and they can tell dad's just mad, oh, they're going to learn from it, but they're not going to learn as much as if they can tell dad's doing this because I did what was wrong, not because he's mad. And I upset him, but I'm the cause. Another suggestion is don't make too many rules so that you're always having to correct. I saw a list recently of a man who's done some work on this that he just developed on his own with his own kids. And he has 5 things. He only has 5 rules in his home. Just 5. The kids know where those boundaries are. They know what those 5 rules are. If they break those 5 rules, they know what's going to happen. But that way, the kids know the limits, but it isn't every time they turn sideways they're in trouble. And they haven't made so many rules that they become disillusioned. So, parents are to guide their children by discipline. Let me give you another point. Parents are to instruct their children. What are they to instruct their children in? Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Let's look at verses 5 through 7. Deuteronomy 6:5 says, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and thou shalt talk with them when thou sittest in thine house, when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy head, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes." Parents are to instruct their children. And in light of that, let me ask you this question. Where should a child first learn about Jesus? The answer is not at church. The answer is not at school. The answer is at home. We are to instruct our children in the Lord. What kind of things does God want us to learn? We ought to be teaching our children the things of the Lord. But we ought to be instructing our children in many areas, whether it be learning good manners, of how to handle ourselves properly in public, in ways in which to, what to do when you go and you spend the night over somebody's house. Parents can instruct their children in these things. Well, let me give you a fourth thing to consider tonight, and that is parents are to set a Christ-like example for their children. We're thinking we are to rear them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and one of these areas is that we are to be setting a Christ-like example for our children. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. 1 Timothy 4:12, very familiar verse, but let's look at it in this context. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believer in word and deed and charity and spirit and faith and purity. Till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect not the gift that is in thee, which is given thee by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Meditate upon them, give thyself wholly to them, that thy profiting may appear to all, taking heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, that in doing this thou shalt save both thyself and them that hear thee. Well, verse 12, I believe, is not talking about only to those who are young, but to those who are older as well. And understanding, when he wrote to Timothy, he's not writing to a 13-year-old. He's writing to a young adult. And when he says, be thou an example of the believer, he's writing to parents as well. And parents are to set a Christ-like example for their children. Let me give you this thought to meditate on. How do my children learn whether I love Jesus? They learn by example. How do my children know whether my thoughts are pure and my actions are upright? By watching. How do they know if I'm greedy? By watching. A few of us were talking earlier today, and I guess Candid Camera was on this past week, and he loves to work with children. And they ask children about their parents many times on Candid Camera. And it's very enlightening because they can tell you all sorts of things. All sorts of things. Now, how did they learn that? Did the parents sit them down and say, now, son, I want you to know this about me? No, that's not how it happens. They learn by example. They learn an awful lot about what you really are by watching you. And to a certain extent, children will be greatly in their future what their home is today. Not entirely, but to a great extent, children will be greatly influenced in the future by the home that they're in today. And so our example is very important. And my last thought this evening concerning parents: if you are to rear them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and that is, you are to protect your children. You have a responsibility to protect your children. Turn to Psalm 101. Look at verses 1 through 3 with me, please. I will sing of mercy and judgment unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk wherein there in my house with a perfect heart. Now, notice verse 3. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of those who turn aside. It shall not cling to me. And I think there's a lesson here, and that is we must protect our children from things that are evil, by also protecting ourselves. The psalmist said, I will set no wicked thing before me. And sadly, we've got many parents today that say, well, I don't want the children to watch this, but it's okay for me as an adult. But it's still wicked. And you know, if we don't allow ourselves to be exposed to those type of things, when we can control it, our children are not going to be near as tempted to be exposed to those things and to get involved in those things. And so we can protect them by what they see and what they hear, and can protect them from those wrong influences by putting some guidelines on our own lives and instruct them in the way of the Lord. What have we got here tonight then? This has been a little bit different, I acknowledge it. I've tried to just share some things with you that are guidelines to help you in making us think about the responsibilities that God has given. For you young people, as an incentive, your future is going to be affected by whether you listen to your parents today. You learn to be obedient today because it will help you so that you are not a self-willed, indignant, unwilling to work with other person when you get married down the road. And for you parents, learn that we have very much a responsibility in guiding our children and disciplining them and instructing them and setting an example for them, because God has chosen that kernel of all society, the home, is a place where much of this is to take place. Let's bow in prayer.